Good afternoon. Certainly it's nice to be here. The weather makes you start thinking about spring outside. I want you to think for a moment about what it would be like if somebody you knew everything there was to know about you. Do you think you would like that if somebody knew everything about you, everything there was to know? It's not unusual to hear someone say, "Nobody really knows me. Nobody understands me. I wish I could find someone who would want to really get to know who I am." But would you want someone to really, truly know everything there is to know about you? I think we tend to put or keep people off at a distance. Some people probably more than others. I'm one of those people that do it probably more than some of you others. You probably all know that already. But I'm more of a private person. My private life, I keep people at a distance. When someone asks you, "How are you doing?" we usually say something like, "Fine" or "Pretty good," no matter how we might feel inside. Maybe we feel awful, or our family is driving us crazy, or the job is going horribly, or you feel like you're losing control of your life. But you still say, "Yeah, I'm fine," and you smile. At least that's what I do. I say, "Yeah, everything's good." And it usually is good. I don't have many problems. We might think that I would like to have someone who really understands me completely, who understands everything about me. But are you sure you would want someone like that? Are you sure you would want someone to know everything there is to know? Can you imagine having someone who really knows all that you've ever done? A person who knows and has access to your every thought and every action, every thought you've ever had, or everything you've ever done, every mistake you've ever made in your life. Imagine not having anything a secret. You probably wouldn't like that very much. At least I know I wouldn't like it very much. As I said before, I'm a private person. I tend not to talk too much about my personal thoughts. Probably to Renita's despair, many times I don't like to talk about my private thoughts as much as she'd like me to. I don't like to share my inner thoughts very often. But let's take it one step further. Suppose someone was to make a movie about your life, and everything was included in that movie. Everything that you've ever done, ever thought about, ever contemplated, ever said was included in that life, or in that movie. All the words that ever slipped out that you wish didn't slip out, all the things you did, all the private thoughts that you had about someone or something, even the things that just slipped in your mind for a moment were put into that movie. And everyone was able to see that movie. I don't think anybody would want that to happen. A movie about your entire life. And everyone's going to know everything about you. Would you enjoy that? Probably not. That would be a terrifying thing. It would scare us quite a bit, I think, if that movie was made like that. I don't think any of us would enjoy seeing a movie like that. It would be frightening to have someone know that much about us. But that is exactly what we are told God does to us. Turn over to Psalm 139. We're going to spend a lot of time in the book of Psalms today. If you want to turn over to Psalm 139, I'm going to read verses 1 through 6. Psalm 139, verse 1. "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and you are acquainted with all my ways. There is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it. For you hedged me behind and before and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high and I cannot attain it." In these scriptures, David uses some descriptive words to talk about how God knows him. He knows everything about him. David uses terms to describe how God knows him in these verses. I'm just going to go over a couple of them here real quick. It says, "God has searched me." In this 139 that we just read it in verse 1, it says, "O Lord, you have searched me." So he is saying that God has searched him completely. I'm sure many of you or all of you have lost things in the past, but have you ever lost like the remote control of the TV and you have to search for it? And what you go through searching for something like that? I know it drives me crazy and it's frustrating when I lose the remote, because it seems to happen to me all the time. I think the boys just take it with them sometimes downstairs. And you turn over the chairs, and you look under the couch, and under the counters, or on the counters, and under the couch, and under the cushions. Even in the refrigerator. I found it one time in the refrigerator. I don't know who put it in there. I think it was probably me. I was probably went to get something to drink and looking around, sat it there. But it's very frustrating. And of course, you search. And that's the point I'm getting across here. You search intently. You look. And that's what David is saying that God does to him. He searches. He searches him. He searches his heart. David wrote, "Lord, you have searched me." God digs into your life. He looks intently. And like I said before, it's kind of scary to think God is searching like that. Turning things upside down, looking under the sofas, under the couch cushions, searching your heart. Kind of uncomfortable to think someone is doing that to you, but that's what God does. Second, David says, "He knows me." The second half of verse 1 says, "You know me. You have searched me and you know me." And again, in verse 2, it's repeated. It says, "You know my sitting down and my rising up." He doesn't know him in the sense of just knowing something about him. He knows you in the sense that he knows your every thought, your every emotion, your every feeling, your every failure, and of course your every victory. He knows everything, every intimate part of you. Then David goes on to say, "He understands my thoughts." That's the last part of verse 2. He says, "You understand my thoughts from afar." God can get inside of our head. He can see what's going on from afar off. Even though he may seem afar off, he knows and can see what's going on in our hearts. God knows everything you've ever thought about and everything you've ever done. When you think about that, that God knows your every thought and it, your every aspiration, your every dream, it sometimes can be a little uncomfortable to think that someone is looking at you that way. But that's the way David says that he's looking. He's searching. Next he says, "He comprehends my comings and my goings." And that's in verse 3. "You comprehend my paths and my lying down." He understands why we do the things we do. He sees our hearts when we're lying down at night, when we're thinking to ourselves at night privately. And he also sees our actions during the day when we go about our business. Next he says, "He is familiar with my ways." That's in verse 3 again. "You are acquainted with all my ways." God knows my habits, my strengths, my weaknesses. He knows all of my business. Next, David says, "He knows my words before I even speak them." He says that in verse 4. "For there is not a word of my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether." So he knows what we're going to say before we even say it. That's really knowing somebody very, very well and having intimate knowledge of their heart. Even before I speak a word, God knows what I'm going to say. God knows so much about us, he even knows how many hairs are on our head. Of course, we know that verse in Matthew 10, verse 30, that he numbers the hairs on our head. That's how intimately he knows us. He is aware of everything around you, everything you do and everything you think. He knows what goes on in private as well as in the public. Now let's notice the last verse in this section, verse 6. It says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it." So it blows our mind to even comprehend that someone can know us like this, but that is the way David describes it. That is how God understands us. We cannot comprehend how well God knows each of our hearts, but God knows everything there is to know about us, every aspect of our heart. He even knows our thoughts and our words before we speak them. God knows all of our shortcomings and sins. He has searched our hearts to find them. But what about us? Are we searching our hearts that same way? Do we know what is in our hearts as well as God does? Do we recognize all of our shortcomings and sins? Do we really search our hearts to find these sins? Or do we just choose to overlook them year after year and pretend they aren't really there? These are the important questions that we have to ask ourselves, especially at this time of the year. I think we all recognize that the Passover is only a few weeks away. And we need to be searching our hearts the way that God searches our hearts. We need to look within ourselves to see what's in there, to see what's left that could be sin that we need to purge out. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 11. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. This is a few verses that we always read or have read to us at the Passover service. It's verses that we all know very well, but it's something we need to be thinking about right now as we lead up to the Passover. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 27 to 29. Therefore, whoever eats the bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the blood of the body and the blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment. These are very sobering words that we all need to contemplate before the Passover arrives. So we are to examine ourselves before we take of the Passover. We are to search our own hearts the way God searches our hearts, and to examine and to look for that sin, and of course to remove it before the Passover time comes. And of course, if we fail to examine ourselves beforehand, we are told in verse 29 what will happen. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment. Of course, that's nothing that we, any of us, want to trifle with, that judgment. God is looking for men and women who have taken the time to search their own hearts, to find those sins and to root them out. Sometimes, though, as a human beings, what we search for and find is very different than what God searches for and finds in our hearts. What our eyes see is very different than what God's eyes might see. We may be able to justify many things within ourselves or within our hearts that God would not justify. He may see things very differently than we do. It reminds me of something happened. This concept reminds me of something that happened in our house a couple of weeks ago. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. I don't know why my mind works this way, but it does. It just reminded me of this situation. I think it was 2 weeks ago, we got a new couch and chair for the boys' room downstairs. Well, it wasn't new. It was new to us. It was Craigslist new. But it was new to us. So we got this new couch and chair, nice leather couch and chair, and we're going to put it in the boys' room downstairs. So Renita told the boys to clean their room, so that when we put the couch and chair down there, everything would be nice and clean. We could just put it in. We just move the new one in there. And the boys assured her that they had cleaned their room. It's perfectly clean. That when you go down there, you won't find anything wrong. And on the surface, it did look clean. When you walked down, everything looked like it was in its place. Everything was where it should be. It looked like it was clean on the surface. But once we moved the couch to put the new couch in, it was not clean underneath that couch. I can remember Renita's horror to see what was under that couch. There was all kinds of dirt and dust. There was old toys. There was balls under there. Coins and candy. It looked like a bunch of rats were living under that couch. A little of everything was under there. But in the boys' eyes, their room was clean. As far as they were concerned, it was clean. But in the eyes of their mom, it was clearly not clean enough. And this illustrates how one person can perceive things one way, but another person can see it in an entirely different way. The key is for us to come to see it in the way that God sees it, not the way that we see it, not the way we perceive it, but the way He perceives it, so that we can see that dirt and grime that He sees when He searches our hearts. The boys thought the room was clean enough in their eyes. Sometimes we see things the way we want to see them, but God sees them as they truly are, different. Our eyes can see our hearts as being one way. We can look into our own heart and think, it's pretty good, I'm doing things the right way, but God may see our hearts in another way. We need to ask God and pray to God and ask Him to show us our hearts in the way that He sees them. A good example of this type of person who saw things very differently than God saw them was Saul. Saul was a guy that saw his heart differently than God saw his heart. Saul was the type of person who saw things the way he wanted to see them, not necessarily the way God would see them. Of course, as you know, Saul was the king of Israel. And as king, he started out pretty good. You know the story. He started out pretty well. But soon he started making a number of mistakes because of his pride and lack of judgment and not listening to God's instructions. Of course, one of his most famous mistakes was when he was instructed to go out and kill all the Amalekites. and not to leave any of them alive, but to kill them all, even down to all the livestock. And Saul went to war and defeated all the Amalekites, and he killed all the babies, the women and children, and he killed all the bad livestock, but of course he kept the very best livestock for himself, and he also left the king alive, which he was told not to do. But because of his arrogance and pride, he thought he could do this. He kept the king as a trophy and all the livestock he wanted, the best livestock he wanted to keep for himself. In his eyes, he could justify it. He could look into his heart and probably think, I'm justified in doing this. But of course, God was not happy. He didn't see it this way at all. And of course, after this, God regretted making Saul king. If you want to turn over to 1 Samuel, I'm just going to hit a few points here in 1 Samuel about this story and maybe a few lessons that we can learn about having this type of attitude that Saul had. So if you want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 13, 1 Samuel chapter 13, we're going to continue on with this idea of searching one's heart or looking to one's heart. 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 13. And Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandments of the Lord thy God, which he had commanded you. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue." And next here is the phrase that we want to focus on. "For the Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord had commanded thee." So after Saul did these things, God was upset. God told him that he's going to search out a man after his own heart. So apparently Saul was not a man after God's heart, because it says that now God is going to search for a man after his own heart to take Saul's place. Now, it was still early in Saul's life, and it would be quite some time before his reign was finished. But in God's mind, it was already finished. It was over. So God began looking in the hearts of men in search for someone who had his heart, a heart like God. And one person caught his attention. And this person was what you would probably call an unlikely candidate for job of king. King of Israel. He was the youngest of 8 sons. He was a shepherd. Was probably an unlikely candidate for being a king, you and I would probably say. At least on the surface, he was unlikely. But there was something about his heart that caught God's eye. It was his heart. It was a heart after God's own heart. It doesn't mean he was sinless. Obviously, we know David was not sinless. I mean, he committed all kinds of sins. But his heart was fashioned after God's heart. It was like God's heart. Turn over to chapter 16 now in 1 Samuel. Chapter 16. We're going to continue on with the story here as now Samuel has to go out and find this young man. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. "And the Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thy horn with oil and go, and I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons." So God has chosen a man after his own heart. Now became the process of revealing who that man was. So he sent out Samuel with an assignment to go see Jesse. Verse 6. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab. He said, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before me." So Samuel saw Eliab, thought, "Surely this is the one." But verse 7 says, "But the Lord said unto Samuel, Look not unto his countenance, or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as a man sees. For a man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." So even Samuel, a man of God, when he saw this, Eliab thought, "Well, this is the guy. He's tall, built. Probably had, good personality. Probably seemed like a man of good character." But God says, "No, I look onto the heart. You're looking on the outside." What God was saying was that on the surface, a young man may look like he had all the credentials of greatness. You may be impressed with his appearance, his talents, his intellect, his strength. He may even appear to be a religious man or spiritually strong on the outside. But that's all from man's perspective. But he's not the man I'm looking for. God was looking at the heart, not the outward appearance. When you think about the heart, another comparison that I kind of thought of was when you go into someone's house as a visitor, you knock on the door. The door is open and you're taken into the front room or the guest room, or usually you take them into the best room of your house, the sitting room or the family room, where all the carpet's nice and the curtains are hung real nice. And that's where you sit and that's where you visit. And you sit on the edge of your seat and you're very well behaved, and your children sit just as they're supposed to sit, and they're very well behaved. They're not making any rude noises or running around throwing anything. They're being polite young men, just like my young men are all the time. But when the guests eventually leave, everyone there relaxes. Of course, the laundry starts to pile up. The dishes start to pile up. Balls start to be thrown across the room. Not that ever happens in our house. Nobody ever throws balls in our house. And the kids start to act up again. We can all put on appearances for one another. We are all good-mannered, well-behaved people when we want to be. But the heart is the real you, the person you really are. Your heart is like the house when nobody else is there, when just you are there. Not the person you pretend to be in the company of other people. And many times that's all we see in each other. We see what is pretended to be in the company of others. We don't see the true heart the way God does. That is what God was looking for in his king. I'm going to go down to verse 8 now. Then Jesse called... That's one of these names, Eliab, and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, "Neither had the Lord chosen this." Then Jesse made Shammah to pass, and he said, "Neither had the Lord chosen this." Again, Jesse made seven of his sons to pass before Samuel, and Samuel said unto Jesse, "And the Lord has not chosen these." And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Are these all your children?" And he said, "There remains yet one, the youngest, and behold, he keeps the sheep. I didn't bother to call him." And Samuel said unto Jesse, "Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." And he sent and he brought him in, and he was ruddy and withal a beautiful countenance and goodly to look at. And the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." And Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of the brethren. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So finally God had his man, the man after his own heart. There was a whole nation of men out there who seemed to be perhaps more qualified. There were seven brothers in his own family who seemed to be more qualified. But this young boy had something the Israel did not have. The people couldn't see it. Even Samuel couldn't see it. Even Jesse, the boy's father, didn't see it. He thought it would be all of his brothers ahead of David. But only God could see it. He had a heart that was fashioned after God's heart. God has searched his heart and found a heart that was just like his. In his inner thoughts, he had the heart of God, and only God knew it. So what about us? Can we have that heart as well, like David had? Can we have a heart patterned after God's heart? We may not be very well educated. We may not be the best looking either, or have the highest standing in our communities, or have the best prestigious job in our community like David didn't either. Maybe nobody would ever guess that we would have God's heart either, like nobody guessed that David did. But like David, we should be striving to have that heart that God is looking for. We are to be examining our hearts to find sin and remove it at this time of the year. We are to be looking to change and to form our hearts into something similar to God's heart. God said, here's a man after my own heart. So it would probably be wise for us to take a look at some of what David wrote and see what David was all about. Because after all, God said, this is a man after my own heart. So for the remainder of the time here, for just a few minutes, I'm going to look at some of what David wrote. Maybe we can get some insight about David's heart, what kind of heart he had, what kind of man he was. And this will give us some examples of what type of heart we should have as well. So to start that, let's turn to Psalm chapter 8. Like I said, I'm only going to hit a few verses here. I only have so much time left to get into the type of person David was or the type of heart that David had. I think if you read through the entire Psalms, all the Psalms, you can get a really good idea. But I'm just going to hit a few here. Psalm chapter 8, verse 1. O Lord, O Lord, how excellent is thy name on all the earth, who has set the glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and nursing infants you have ordained strength because of your enemies, that you have silenced the enemy and the avenger. When I consider the heavens, the works of your fingers, and the moons and stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou should be mindful of him, the son of man that thou visitest him? For thou hast made him a little lower than the angels, and hast crowned him with the glory and honor. So a man who is like has a heart like God's, which David did, is obviously a humble man. David was a humble man. He realized how great and awesome God was, and how great and awesome his creation was, and it humbled him. You can see that in these verses. It humbled him to think about it. He gave praise and honor to God at all times. He was a man who was willing and eager to praise God always. He always gave God his praise. He was in awe of his creation and praised his power and creation continually. Now if you want to turn over to Psalm 29, we'll read some more about what David wrote. Get some more insight into what his heart was like. Psalm 29, verses 1 to 4. I give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of his holiness. Again, worship, praise, honor to God always. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. He could see God's handiwork in all the creation. And when he saw God's creation, he praised God. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. David, a man after God's own heart, praised God's incredible, awesome power every time he had the opportunity. And he could see his power in his creation. And it humbled him. It humbled him every time he looked at it. That was one of the characteristics that David's heart had. Another characteristic that David's heart had was that he loved God's laws. David loved God's laws. That was a characteristic of his heart. Psalm 119. Very familiar group of verses here in Psalm 119. Verses 97 to 100. Psalm 119, verses 97 to 100. We have a hymn in our hymn book that sings these words. Oh, how I love thy law, it is my meditation all the days. Though through thy commandments hast made me wiser than all my enemies, for they are ever with me. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for their testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients, because I keep thy precepts. David loved God's laws. He meditated on them day and night. He knew that it was because of these laws that it made him wiser than all his enemies and all the other people around him. He loved and kept God's laws. The third characteristic that I have here about David's heart was he hated sin. Of course, when you think of David, you think of all of his sins. He had many sins. But he actually did hate sin, the way God hates sin. But he was, of course, human and slipped up. You want to turn over to Psalm 101 now. We'll read more of David's words to get some more insight about his heart, what his heart was like. Psalm 101, verse 1. I will sing of mercies and justice. To you, O Lord, I will sing praises. Again, he's praising God here. I will behave wisely in a perfect way. Oh, when will you come to me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. So he's striving to do what's right. He's striving to put sin out. I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. I hate the works of those who fall away. They shall not cling to me. So he hates sin. And he doesn't want to walk with people who are sinful. A perverse heart shall depart from me. I will not know wickedness. Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. So he doesn't want to even be around people who are sinning. He hates sin the way God hates sin. My eyes shall be on the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He who walks in a perfect way, he shall serve me. He who works deceit shall not dwell within my house. He who tells lies shall not. Early I will destroy all the wicked of the land, that I may cut off all the evildoers from the city of the Lord. Again, David, of course, was not a sinless man. We all know that. But we could see through his writings that in his heart, he hated sin. He hated to be around sin. And just like God hates to be around sin. And he wanted to keep it as far away from him as possible. The fourth thing I have here that we can see about David's heart is that he was a sinner. And he acknowledged that he was a sinner. In his heart, he knew he was a sinner, and he acknowledged it. He readily acknowledged it before God that he was a sinner. And of course, he was very thankful for the forgiveness that he received. When you read through some of the Psalms, I'm just going to hit one here, but you can see how thankful he was for God's mercy. If you want to turn over to Psalm 51, verses 1 to 4, here is an example that we can see into David's heart of how thankful for God's mercy he really was. Because David knew he was a sinner. He knew he had done terrible things. He admitted those things to God. He repented. And you can see here in Psalm 51 how thankful he was for that mercy. Psalm 51, verse 1. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from mine iniquity and cleanse me from my sin, for I have acknowledged my transgressions, and my sins are ever before me. So he acknowledged he was a sinner. My transgressions are ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned. So he acknowledged here that it was against God is the only one he has sinned against. And have done evil in their sight, and that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge. David knew he was a sinful man, and he asked God to forgive him. Having a heart made after God's own heart doesn't mean that we don't sin, because of course we all do. It means that you hate sin the way God hates sin. But if and when you do sin, you recognize it, you repent of it, and you change it. And you immediately ask for forgiveness. This is what David did. David certainly did sin. And he could say he committed some whoppers, at least by today's standard. These were some whoppers of sins that he committed. But he went before God with the correct attitude, with the right heart, with humility and repentance. And you can see how very thankful he was that God showed mercy on him. Psalm 103, if you want to turn it over now to Psalm 103. Again, a few more words written by David here. Give us some insight into what his heart was like. Psalm 103, verse 11. For as the heaven is above, high above the earth, so great is his mercy toward them who fear them. Again, so thankful for God's mercy. As far as east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. Like a father pities his children, so the Lord pities them that fear him. David's heart was so thankful for receiving God's mercy after he had sinned. And of course, he had repented of that sin. Thankfulness for God's mercy was definitely part of David's heart. You can see that was in his heart. So the fifth characteristic of David's heart that I have listed here today is David had a personal relationship with God, his Father. He had a very, very intimate and personal relationship with God, his Father. Psalm 23. You can turn it over to Psalm 23. You don't even need to turn there. We all probably have it pretty much memorized in our head what Psalm 23 says. But when you read the words in Psalm 23, you can see that personal, intimate relationship that David had with God. Psalm 23, verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me down to lie in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leadeth me to the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. So he found great comfort in his relationship with his father. He had a very personal and close relationship. That was in his heart. That was the type of heart David had. He loved God as his father. David definitely had a very personal relationship with God. Is God that personal to you or to me? Do you see him meeting every need? Do you see him comforting you, meeting every single need, leading you by the still waters, letting you lay down in the green pastures, fulfilling and providing every single need you have in your life? That's the way David felt about God. He felt that everything he needed, God would provide. David definitely had a very personal relationship with God. And this personal relationship with God is critical to someone who wants to have a heart like David's heart or a heart like God's heart. So what do you and I need to do to create a heart like David had? What do you and I need to do to become a man or a woman after God's own heart? Well, of course, the Bible, the scripture is full of things. I mean, you could go on forever about the things that we need to do to have a heart like God's heart. But David gave us a few good insights into his heart. If you read through all the books in the Psalms, you can see the insights into David's heart, the type of heart he had. And of course, I just gave you five examples here. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds you could pull out. But I pulled out five here. He was humble. He was a humble man. He was complete awe of his Creator's handiwork. And he gave praise and honor to God at all times. One thing when you read through the Psalms that you notice again and again is that David is constantly praising God. Constantly praising God. And giving him the praise he deserves. Second, we learn that David's heart loved God's laws. David meditated on them day and night, as he says. And he gave them credit for all of his wisdom. Third, David also hated sin. We know that David was a sinful man, but he hated sin. And he wanted to avoid it, and he tried to avoid it. Fourth, he acknowledged that he was a sinner. Of course, David did acknowledge that. And he repented and was very, very thankful for God's mercy and the mercy that God had given to him. And fifth, and most importantly, was that David had a personal relationship with God, his father. He was really like a father and a friend to David. He was completely dependent on God for all of his needs. So in conclusion, God has searched our hearts. That's what went over in the beginning. It's not if, it's not when, he has. He is searching our hearts. The Bible tells us God has searched our hearts. He knows us completely. He knows our every thought. He even knows what you're going to say before you say it. We read that. And it's only a couple weeks now before the Passover. So now it's our turn to search our hearts and to see what's in our hearts as well. To find those sins that we might have left slip by in years past and to root them out. We know that we are not to partake of the Passover until we do a complete examination of our hearts and to purge out any leaven that we find in there. And as I said before, it's kind of scary to think that God is searching our hearts, that someone knows everything there is to know, that someone out there actually knows everything you've ever thought, everything that's ever popped into your mind, every deed you've ever done. In a way, it can be scary to think that he knows all that. You would never invite someone to search everything about you. You would never want someone to know all there is to know about all your innermost thoughts. You would never want that movie to be made about everything you've ever done, said, or even thought about to yourself. But David said to him, "Search me, O God, and know my heart." David wanted him to search his heart. David wanted him to know everything about himself. "Search me and know my heart" could only be spoken by someone who feels completely loved and accepted. These words could only be spoken to someone who unconditionally loves the other person. You would never say that to someone that was a stranger. You would never say that to someone who you felt uncomfortable with. You would only say that to someone you had unconditional love for. To invite someone to see all there is to see all the ugliness and dirt, to see all my successes and all my failures, to see my strengths and my weaknesses, really makes you feel vulnerable. It's a vulnerable thing to do. to let someone inside you like that. You have to know that person that you're inviting to look at you that closely will love you no matter what. No matter what he finds, you have to know he's still going to love you. And that's what David felt. Psalm 139 does not describe the eye of a critical or vengeful God, looking for a chance to put you down or destroy you, searching your heart to find something wrong and then put you down and destroy you because of it. That's not what Psalm 139 is describing. Instead, it's the eye of a loving parent or a true friend, wanting to know all they can know about you so that they can help you, so that they can help you with your problems or things you need to overcome, wanting to know you so they can be close to you and help you. It should actually be a comforting thought to know that God is searching our hearts. It should not be a fearful or an uneasy thought, but a comforting thought. And I think the most comforting part of this psalm is at the very end. If you want to turn back to Psalm 139, just in the end, for closing here, the last verse I'm going to read. Psalm 139, verse 23 to 24. It's the verse we already went over, but I want to read it and emphasize one last thing. Psalm 139, verse 23. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Again, David asking God to search him. Try me. Know my thoughts. He wanted God to try him to know his thoughts. And see if there be any wicked in me, any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. David was saying to search me so that you can know my heart. To try me so that you can know all of my thoughts. To know me. To see if there are any wicked ways in me so that you can remove them. And finally, to lead me in the way everlasting into your kingdom. And that should be a comforting thought here at the end of this psalm. This is great advice for all of us who aspire to have God's heart. And I think all of us here aspire to have his heart as well. So in other words, we should be asking God to do whatever it takes to make me a man, or to make you a woman after God's own heart.